Now, on this Invest Talk podcast, Justin Klein listens to your questions.
Hey guys, this is George in Massachusetts. I was wondering if you could discuss the pros and cons of buying stocks on margin. I appreciate it, and thanks.
And provides unbiased answers.
Well, the pros are, if you're right, you'd earn a higher bang for your buck, return on your dollars. The downside is it can lead you to financial ruin if you make the wrong mistake, and margin costs interest. So even if you are right, your excess return needs to be above that level of interest you're paying on margin, and typically it's not cheap.
Invest Talk, over 40 million downloads and counting across America and around the world. Your participation makes it unique. 888-99-CHART.
This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Thursday, April 7th, 2022 edition of Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein, and I'm ready. I'm ready to answer your finance and investment questions this hour and help you take that next step in your path towards financial freedom. We are in an interesting time. There's a lot of cross currents, different winds than we're used to. And that brings volatility. It also brings a different set of opportunities, a different set of risks. And my job is to give you the tools, give you the data, give you the perspective to help you make good financial decisions, whether that's spending decisions, whether that's investment decisions, whether that's savings decisions. Okay. And that's our goal on today's show. Now, we're obviously transitioning in the markets as well as the economy. You see that with higher rates, higher inflation, and you're probably feeling that a bit on the ground in your day-to-day lives, in your assets, in your home values. And all of this is probably worrying to some, confusing to others, and exciting for many. I think it's exciting. I love markets like this. Markets where you can find bargains. Markets where there's great opportunity presenting itself each and every day, more and more. So the reality on the ground is that there are new long-term trends just emerging. And your job, my job, is to understand those trends. And don't fight them. Go with them. And so on this show, I'm going to operate my mission statement, which is independent thinking and shared success. I'm going to give you unbiased guidance, assistance in regards to particular stocks, particular sectors, strategy, whatever it is, money related, investment related. I am here to just give you the facts as they see them in front of me. Like I said, I have a lot of data, tons of data, and 20 plus years of investment experience. So I encourage you to reach out to me with your finance and investment questions. And when you do that, you get to shape this show to your liking. I can talk about whatever is on my mind, but most importantly, this show is for you. So call right now with your on our live stream from 4 to 5 Pacific time, or if you're listening after hours, you can leave a question on our Invest Talk voice bank. Either way, the number never changes. It's 888-99-CHART. So let's get right to our first listener question now.
Hey guys, this is George in Massachusetts. I was wondering if you could discuss the pros and cons of buying stocks on margin. I appreciate it, and thanks. Bye.
Well, the pros are, if you're right, you'd earn a higher bang for your buck, return on your dollars. The downside is it can lead you to financial ruin if you make the wrong mistake. And margin costs interest. So even if you are right, your excess return needs to be above that level of interest you're paying on margin. And typically, it's not cheap. Depends on your broker, 6, 7, 8%. It changes, okay? So those are kind of the pros and cons. And I would advise against it, honestly. If you use a little margin, you know, a couple percent of your account, no big deal. But using double-digit margin, I think, is a bad idea. So I definitely wouldn't go that route, all right? Now, my focus point today is based on the story behind this question. What does shrink the Fed balance sheet actually mean? Fed officials came to a consensus on what their next step in monetary policy will be, and that will be a 50 basis point increase as well as a balance sheet runoff. And how will that affect investors? So we're going to talk about that. Also, I want to discuss a trend in digital payments, and that is Zelle. Zelle, Z-E-L-L-E. Most of you probably used it within your bank. And the question is, what about, what's the trend? What are the trends there? And how is that going to affect Visa and MasterCard? Then also, mortgage rates rise and home sellers fear time may be running out to cash in. So what's happening with all of that? But let's check in on the market today. The S&P, that was up about 19 points, about 0.5% there. And, that's a modest up day. I still think there's some juice to the upside in this market, but I still expect a lot of chop for most of the year. So that's where we're at right now. You had interest rates up once again. Gold was up, and continuation of kind of the trends you've seen, value over growth, etc. Now we're moving into a short break. Carl from Oceanside, hang on. You'll be next on Invest Talk at 888-99-CHART.
Your objective is to work hard, plan well, and achieve financial freedom, right? You're in luck, because Justin Klein is here now, ready to take your finance and investment questions. Call 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Carl in Oceanside, looking at HUN, Huntsman Corporation. You own it or looking to buy it?
Yes. I bought it I bought it because they announced a share buyback maybe months ago. And I looked at Huntsman, they pay a little bit dividend, and the stock was on an uptrend, but now it goes on a downtrend. I'm wondering what is wrong with the company.
Well, I think it's in a downtrend now, really, because earnings expectations are coming down and growth is set to slow. In 2019, they made $1.53, and then during the pandemic, that they suffered a bit. Earnings were a little bit less than a dollar. Last year, $3.54 in earnings, and next year, $4.05. But that growth, once again, is decelerating. And that's why this has rolled over. And it's a chemical producer. So most chemical producers are pretty cyclical, because those chemicals typically go into products. And when the economy slows, consumer goods demand slows, well, the demands for the raw materials, the chemicals that go into those products, also slows. And that's what you're seeing already. More people are spending on services over goods. And I think that's the issue here. Now, it's a good company. It's small. Its market cap is about $7.3 billion. I guess it's a mid cap, I would say. Historically, its cash flow is pretty consistent outside of the COVID year, which that's completely understandable. And based on that $600 million in free cash flow that it kind of has averaged, I think it's at a decent value. And its return on equity has consistently been high teens, 20% range. So I like the company. I just think near term, you're seeing some economic headwinds. And so this is a good example of, you don't want to just buy a company because they announced a share buyback. That's nice and probably smart, especially at the valuation that Huntsman is now. But it's in the short term, that's not going to matter a whole much. or a whole lot. Long term, absolutely. But that's what you're seeing now. It's just the economy turning a bit, and that's going to feed into their expected profits for next year and this year, and the stock's going to adjust accordingly. So that's the reaction you're seeing. Thanks for the call, Carl.
Okay.
Now, my focus point today is based on the story behind this question. What does shrink the Fed's balance sheet actually mean? And the Fed minutes came out yesterday, and it was pretty clear that they discussed at the March meeting and came to a consensus around balance sheet reduction of about $95 billion a month. And that means $60 billion in treasuries and $35 billion in mortgage-backed securities that would be allowed to roll off. Now, this doesn't mean they're absolutely going to shrink their balance sheet by $95 billion per month. That's the cap that they're going to put on it. And based on the composition of their treasury portfolio, some of them there may be $60 billion worth of treasuries that roll off each month. There may not. And if it's less, then they'll just go with that number. Same with mortgage-backed securities. They roll off when they mature. Typically, they're longer period of time. But they have in the mortgage market, there's things called refinancing. And you refinance the home, you pay off the old mortgage. And if that mortgage was owned by one of the mortgage-backed securities on the Fed's balance sheet, well, then they're not going to replace that. Okay. Or if you go and sell your home, pay that off and buy another home, that old mortgage is paid off. And then maybe that rolls off the Fed balance sheet as well. But so, and when interest rates rise, that probably is going to be slower because there's less activity in the housing market. There's less refinancing, et cetera. So don't think they're going to guarantee to roll off $95 billion per month. Now, what also they came to consensus on was a 50 basis point rate hike. And some of them wanted to do that last meeting in March, but they were a bit deterred because of the uncertainty around the Ukraine war. But now that we're about 6 weeks into the war, that's kind of known, well, the economic ramifications for the most part. Now, the minutes were basically a very strong signal, continued hawkish signal, that they're serious about fighting inflation. And markets are expecting the Fed to increase a total of 250 basis points this year. They've only done 25 basis points. So the market is now pricing in, just last week it was 8, now it's closer to 10. Pretty crazy. Now they still have a tight labor market on their side, but some members wanted no cap on the amount of roll-off. Others thought it would be good if it's relatively high. And I think that's what that $95 billion number is. Now, how will this affect investors? Well, remember, the Fed has signaled a lot of this for pretty much starting in the fall of last year, for better part of 6 months. And it's been pretty clear that their rhetoric continues to get more hawkish and more hawkish. And I think they are, like I said yesterday, trying to create bullets in their holster to pull back some of those rate hikes that the market has priced in. But it doesn't mean they're not going to fall through with the first maybe half of that 250 basis points that's priced in. But if they do, say, 125, they do 50 this meeting and then 50 the next meeting, that'd be 125 basis points for those three meetings. And then they could see what the economy's like if inflation's slowing going into the back half of the summer. And they could pull some of those rate hikes off the table. And that's, I think, the bullish outlook. Now, the question is, at what level of market's pain will they be doing that? Where is that Fed put, shall we say? Clearly, the market, it's down for the year, 5% or so. Not enough for the market or the Fed to freak out. They're okay with that, especially after a 20-plus return year last year. So I really don't think that so far that this rhetoric is going to really change the dynamics of the market. But as they continue to follow through on their rhetoric, I think that's when you start to see more market disruptions. Now, Steve and I are thankful for your podcast support and our free downloads. We'll always continue, but I want to make you aware of two other ways to find our material and unbiased guidance: our Invest Talk YouTube channel, where I do a video every Friday, and an Instagram account as well. So head over there and search Invest Talk. Remember, use two T's. Now, the phone lines are open, so give us a call now at 888-99-CHART.
It's an Invest Talk Thursday. Justin Klein is on duty, and he's happy to provide unbiased answers, but you've got to call with your questions. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Mike here from Iowa calling in. Love your show. I've learned a lot from you guys. I have a quick question. For a few years now, I've owned SHW is a ticker symbol. I believe that's Sherwin-Williams. It did have a nice run-up for me. I hung on to it where I probably should have sold all of it or some of it. But anyways, now it's dropped back down to approximately where I bought it at. The stock hasn't done much at all, really, this year, and I don't know if it's going to recover again. I'm wondering what you guys feel on the stock. It doesn't pay much of a dividend, and I don't know if it's going to have any room for growth or not. I'm considering just selling most of it or all of it completely and maybe buying United Healthcare, or else putting the money just in an ETF, like an Energy One or a Value One in Value Stock ETF. Those both have been doing well last year, of course, and I'm sure they'll do well into the future. What are your feelings on this? Thank you for all your help. Have a good day.
Well, if you do sell it, I would go with either value or energy ETF, if you're trying to keep it simple. But Sherwin-Williams, this is one of the largest, I believe it is the largest producer of architectural paint, I guess you would call it, in the United States. They have 4,800 stores, and they're the high price point because they're higher quality. And people have had money to repaint their homes, remodel their homes, etc. And this benefited greatly during the pandemic. Okay. But that is expected to slow. And you're already seeing analyst expectations for this year and next year come back down. The last two quarters ago, revenue was flat year over year. Earnings were down 24%. Fourth quarter, revenue only up 6%. Earnings down 21%. And its forward P/E ratio is 30 times. It's kind of expensive. Now, this has rolled over. It's down 25% from its 52-week high, and it's getting a little bounce here, but I think this is a bounce to sell. You know, as long as rates stay relatively high, 5%, like I said on last segment, refinancing is plummeting because most people are locked in at sub 3 or low 3s. Now, rates are 4.5, 5. So, there's not a lot of incentive to refinance your home, and if you want to do a cash-out refinance now, you got to pay a higher interest rate on top of a higher mortgage balance. And a lot of people are reluctant to do that. And so there's a lot less money to spend on your home and painting your home, painting your rooms, etc. So I think that's what you're seeing here. And the market is speaking pretty loud. And yes, it's come down 25%, but it was very overvalued, 25% higher. And I think it's still overvalued. Our value is closer to $175 per share. Now it's at $263 at the close today. Its enterprise value to EBITDA is about 25. And over the last decade, that's been closer to the mid-teens. So I think there's a good chance of another 30, 40% drop from here just to get back to market multiples or historical multiples. So I'm going to pass on. I would say, yeah, I would trade out of this on a bounce. Could there be some more upside in the near term? Sure. But I would be using it to sell and, like you said, move into a value or energy-focused ETF. Thanks for the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's talk a little bit about Zelle. Now, Zelle is the payment platform that banks launched. It's mainly owned by JP Morgan, Bank of America, and Wells Fargo. And it was kind of the competitor to Venmo, PayPal's Venmo. And it's caught on. There was a record 1.8 billion transactions last year, totaling $490 billion. That was more than double their pre-pandemic levels. Now, these banks are debating whether to bring Zelle to more places. As opposed to just passing money between people, using it in more of a retail setting. And the owners are split on whether this is a good idea. Now, banks collectively earn billions of dollars in fees, merchant fees, when shoppers use debit and credit cards. Well, Visa and MasterCard, they take some of that for themselves. And some of the banks worry that if they go this route, they're going to be taking away their revenue on the credit card side. Now, Wells Fargo and Bank of America apparently are for expanding the service to retail payments. JP Morgan, not so much. They have a bigger credit card business, I believe, and a better relationship with maybe Visa and MasterCard. Now, Bank of America customers made more Zelle transactions than wrote paper checks for the first time ever last year. Now, this would take that all seven banks that own early warning, so those are the top three, the biggest holders, but all seven banks would have to approve it for all 1,450 financial institutions to start using it. Now, they're still talking about how it's going to work and, are there incentives for consumers to be able to use it, etc. But the big message to me here is the premiums that MasterCard and Visa have been trading at for a long, long period of time, I don't know why they should in this world of digital payments, whether that's crypto or Zelle or Venmo or a lot of other ways to move money and pay for things. And I think it's just kind of assumed that Visa and MasterCard are going to remain the dominant players. And I think there's a good chance that 5-10 years from now, that's no longer the case. Now, it's moving fast this Thursday, and I'm here ready to answer your questions at 888-99-CHART. You know what's great? Being able to work productively from anywhere. I mean, with just a laptop and decent Wi-Fi. Guess what's not so great? Having your team spread out across the country while you try to keep everyone on the same page and focused on critical tasks. You'll be glad you discovered Coda, a new kind of doc that brings words, data, and teams together. You see, with your best writer in City A, your star presenter in City B, and your numbers wizard in City C, things can get complicated. But with the power of Coda, everything in your workflow is synced. For example, make an update in a table, and it automatically shows up everywhere for every team member. That's right, no more relying on copy and paste to keep essential projects current. With Coda, your team can operate on the same information and collaborate the way things should be, with efficiency and speed, in real time. Coda comes with a set of building blocks that anyone can combine to create a doc as powerful as an app. Coda is endlessly customizable and connected. There are templates for anything and everything. Product roadmap, remote onboarding, OKR tracker, meeting notes. You name it, Coda has it. Coda started from scratch and built a new type of doc that blends the best parts of documents, spreadsheets, presentations, and applications. With Coda, you can solve for just about anything. And right now, you can get started having your team all working together on the same page for free. Head over to coda.io/invest. That's coda.io to get started for free. coda.io/invest. Understanding investment options can be a daunting, time-consuming task. The same is true for the right work software. Let's focus on the work software you should know about, Monday.com WorkOS. First, what is Monday.com WorkOS? It's a flexible platform that gives teams the ability to easily customize work software to fit their needs. With Monday.com WorkOS, you can integrate all your favorite tools and apps into one centralized platform to unify work. Automate manual processes to save time and enhance efficiency. Visualize project progress and notify stakeholders on updates in real time. collaborate across teams and departments, import all your existing files and data into one organized place. In other words, Monday.com WorkOS is a powerful work software that lets you manage all your work exactly the way you want. You can customize your workflows so that everyone understands their role in moving work forward. With Monday.com, managers have full visibility into what their team is working on. No check-ins, email chains, or team calls necessary. The platform is super intuitive and easy to use, and there are already 127,000 customers that are powered by Monday.com. To start your free 2-week trial, go to Monday.com/podcast. That's Monday.com/podcast. Get your free 2-week trial started right now. Go to Monday.com/podcast. That's Monday.com/podcast. Get ready to hear a cha-ching that can make your life a whole lot easier. That's the sound of another smooth Shopify transaction. And now you ask, what is Shopify? Quite simply, Shopify is the all-in-one commerce platform that you can use to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify is designed for anyone to sell anywhere, giving entrepreneurs the resources once exclusively reserved for big business. Shopify provides a great-looking online store that brings your ideas to life with easy access to the tools to manage your day-to-day operations and drive sales. Know this, Shopify powers millions of entrepreneurs from first sale to full scale. That's more than a catchy phrase. It's reality. With Shopify, you can get started by building and customizing your online store without the need for coding or design experience. Shopify has thousands of integrations and third-party apps, from on-demand printing to accounting to advanced chatbots and beyond. Shopify instantly lets you accept all major payment methods. Plus, with 24/7 support, you're never alone. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. Ready to take your dream to the next level? Go to shopify.com/invest, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Start selling on Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/invest right now. shopify.com/invest.
You are listening to Invest Talk, and the market has been interesting. So you'll have important finance and investment questions, and Steve and Justin welcome your calls now. Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART.
Every day I wake up before work and download this podcast. It's like my favorite show to listen to right now. And I had a question about Citigroup. It's on sale right now, it appears. And I'm very high on the stock because it's lower than the book value. And it's Peter Lynch's price to earnings growth. It looks good on that number, as well as Warren Buffett's pre-tax income rule. Do you believe this is a good stock to buy right now? Thank you. I'll listen to the answer on the show. Have a good day.
Well, first, don't go off book value, especially for financial companies, because the rules have kind of changed when it comes to marking assets to market. And, you know, there's accounting reasons for writing down assets or writing up assets. So I would not use book value for this. You want to look at cash flow, profitability, quality of their assets, et cetera. Now, Citigroup, the problem with Citigroup is historically they've been a below average allocator of capital. And this is in a downtrend. And the reason it's in a downtrend is because the yield curve is flattening and they have a lot of credit card issuers or a lot of credit card creditors. And they're going to have rising defaults because of, a slowing economy. And I just don't think it's a good time to be in these large banks. They have a lot of regulation, added costs because of those large, the size, right? They're strategically important, systematically important. And therefore, I just don't like it. I don't love banks right now in general. So I definitely don't like the big banks. So just not a big fan of Citi and historical management of the business. Now, let's make it two calls in a row. This time, the question came from a listener in Hawaii.
Hi, Steve and Justin. Dave calling from Hawaii, longtime listener.
I'm looking at Heritage Insurance Holdings, Inc. The ticker is HRTG, Hotel Romeo Tango Golf. It's a micro cap, around $190 million, but I'm not looking at this for an investment. I'm actually looking at this for insurance purposes. So they actually own Zephyr Insurance, which provides hurricane insurance here in Hawaii. And with such a small market cap, I'm wondering if this company can stay solvent given a major hurricane here in the islands. So hoping you could shed some light on the relationship between an insurance company's market cap or some other metric and their ability to actually pay out given a major event. Many thanks for all you do. Love the podcast.
This is actually a very good question. And you're right. They're a very small company, $174 million market cap. They only do $166 million in revenue per quarter. And, you know, that's a very good question. Now, what you want to look at is the AM Best rating for Heritage Insurance. Now, what they could be doing is, and they're likely doing, is what is called reinsurance. Almost every insurance company does this. They might insure you and they sell off a piece to reinsurers at the best price so that they diversify their risk, and they might be reinsuring you or your home to a much larger insurer. So I would actually just simply go off AM Best, and let me take a look here. Do I have this? B plus, good. Outlook, positive. So, you know, it's solid. I think it's okay. I would go based on AM Best more than anything, because they're looking at the risk that they're taking with their book, with reinsurance, etc. So that's the way I would be looking at it. Not necessarily the underlying size of the company. I'd be relying more on AM Best. Thanks for the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through and ask your question on today's show. We have about 20 minutes left, so I'm ready for your calls. 888-99-CHART. Now let's touch a bit on the housing market. And homeowners are, in some ways, thinking they missed out. And there's starting to become a rush for sellers to get their house on the market. A little bit anxiety here. Now, higher rates should, in theory, cool prices. But you already have a market, in most markets, where inventory for homes remains very low. And while it's going to squeeze, higher rates are certainly going to squeeze some people out of the market or into lower priced homes. It's going to take a while for the market to kind of right itself and go from a seller's market today to a buyer's market. Now, the first thing you have to think about is don't just think about interest rates and you just say, oh, interest rates going up, I need to sell my home. The first step is to understand your local real estate market and your own financial situation. Now, with inflation rising, consumers getting a little more pessimistic, mortgage rates will price some buyers, like I said, out of the market. The average 30-year rate is now 4.72%. And like I said, it's going to take a little while, but don't do it just because you think that the market's going to weaken dramatically. I don't think it really is. And a lot of people try to time the market, and that's difficult. What you want to do is think, do I want to own this home for the next 2-3 years? If you're downsizing, this is a good time to get it on the market, buy that cheaper home, etc. If you have rental properties that you want to get rid of, this is a good time to sell it. Get ahead of that buyer's market that it probably is 9 to 12 months out. So I know there's a lot of anxiety out there, but I still think there's time for you to sell, and you don't need to be in a frenzy. All right? And if you're a buyer, I'd be patient. Let's go to John in North Carolina looking at Ally.
Yeah, hey, Justin. Hey, you gave some really sound advice on a company called Tronox about a month ago that I stubbornly refused to take. So I thought I would try again with another company. This company, Ally Financial, is my second largest position, and that's just a result of the fact that it ran up quite a bit off its pandemic lows. Mm-hmm. I just heard you say earlier about not being a fan of big banks. This doesn't really fit the big bank model. Mm-hmm. More of a lender, especially in the automotive space. Seems to me if we head towards a recession, there'll be probably a lot less car buying. So, you know, P is so low, the valuation looks so good, but do I need to kind of take a step back, maybe trim and revisit it in the future? What do you think about that?
I think you are correct. I would trim. It's in a downtrend. Its chart is definitely bearish. It's kind of stair-stepping lower. And its valuation, I do think, is coming down. And a lot of that has to do with this kind of over-earned. And I think a lot of the reason it over-earned is because of a tight car market. Remember, they're lending money. And they not only are sales prices going up, so the amount they're lending is a lot more, so their interest income's a lot more, so that's definitely benefiting them. But also the strength of the underlying value of their assets. Remember, these are loans backed by what? Cars. And if the underlying value of the cars are going up, well then if somebody stops paying, they're happy to go repossess it, sell it. They're probably going to make a profit. Whereas maybe a few years ago, they were going to lose money, right? So it's a fantastic, unemployment rate's very low. So most people are paying up. They're paying off it's easy to pay off their old loan if they're selling their car because they're getting a good amount for it. So I think this is over-earning in a big, big way. 2019, they made $3.84. Last year, they made $8.22. Are they going to really make that much again? I would say closer to $4 is what they're probably going to trend to back over time. You already see last quarter, earnings down 2% year over year. Revenue flat year over year. So it's not like their volume is going up dramatically. I just think their profit per loan is going up. And that's waning as supply chain issues ameliorate and we get back to a normal car market. Now that's still maybe a year away, but the market's going to start to price that in and already has. And that's why you see it in a downtrend. So I would definitely at the bare minimum be trimming your position in Ally. Now the second quarter is well underway. Today was the fifth trading day of the quarter and volatility, as we've explained here, is probably only going to continue. But with volatility means opportunity. And the question is, are you prepared? Is your portfolio prepared for this market that we're in? And that's why I think it might be worth taking a minute to make you aware of some of the benefits of working with myself and Steve Peasley at our company, KPP Financial, based in Irvine, California, which is, if you don't know, in Orange County in Southern California. And let me remind you that here on Invest Talk and at KPP, we operate with the same philosophy, independent thinking and shared success. So how do we implement this? Well, we provide unbiased guidance, both on and off air, and we practice parallel investing, which means we invest right alongside our clients. So I encourage you to take advantage of our free portfolio review assessment via telephone or go to meetings. Just send us a message through investtalk.com or call our KPP Financial office at 800-557-5461. We'd love to help you in any way. Now, next up, we'll go back to the InvestTalk voice bank. Remember, the phone lines never close at 888-99-CHART.
Each day, InvestTalk listeners submit their finance and investment questions via phone or email. And Steve and Justin, thank you for your loyalty. Would you like your question to be put near the top of the list? Just take a minute or two to leave a review and rating for InvestTalk at iTunes. And be sure to include a brief question with your iTunes review comments. Your rating is a vote of confidence that leads to higher visibility and causes more people to discover and listen to InvestTalk. So please tell your friends and family members about the free InvestTalk downloads at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and InvestTalk.com. Remember to include your brief question when you review and rate on iTunes. And of course, your calls are always welcome 24/7. Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name is Nathan from Cleveland, Ohio, and I have a question. I recently sold some covered calls, and now the price of the stock is over my strike price. I was wondering if you recommend if I just wait until the shares get called away, or sell the option and lose out on the intrinsic value of the option. I appreciate your answer. Thank you.
All right. A lot of people that sell cover calls, they freeze when their call, when their the stock goes in the money. Now, for everyone out there, cover call is basically when you buy a stock, you buy the underlying, say it's at $50, you sell a call at, say, a 55 strike. And you get a premium for that. And most people, they love that. They get a premium, they get more income, they get to hold the stock, they get that upside to 55, they get some dividend. But the problem is that sometimes it goes above 55. And now you're capped. And then you freeze and you go, what do I do? Do I let it get called away? Do I just buy back the option? And, you know, what do I do? Well, what we usually do, we run a cover call strategy, we roll it. What you can do is roll it. And sometimes you can get a credit for that. Sometimes you have to pay a little bit of money. And rolling is basically you buy it back at the 55 strike, whatever the price is, hopefully a few days before expiration. And then you sell out to the next month. So for this month, we get option expiration next week in the month of April. And then we roll it out to May. And maybe a higher strike, maybe it's $57.50, maybe it's $60 per share, etc. And that gives you more upside in the stock. And you're selling more premium. You might even still get a credit for it, depending on, you know, where everything's going. So don't freeze. Don't think that, oh my God, I got to let it get called away, or I have to just buy it back so I keep the stock. You can roll it. You can massage these positions. And that's what we do. And it works out very well if you kind of know what you're doing. You don't freeze and think that this is most options, they don't expire where in the money, where somebody's taking a position. Most people are buying that back. And most people don't realize, most amateurs don't realize that you can do that. It's a great way to bring in more income, but don't let it freeze you and make you hold it to the end. Most of the time, you should roll it. Thanks for the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how you get through and ask your question on today's show. We only have about 8 minutes left. So I encourage you to reach out with any questions that you have. We love individual stock questions. I love broad questions. That was kind of a broad question, a cover call type of strategy question. And I'm all for it, whether it's technical, whether it's fundamental, whether it's about the commodities market overall, even geopolitical considerations. Because geopolitical considerations in regards to the market are even more important today than they have been in a long period of time. And you need to be abreast of that if you're going to invest, because those winds of geopolitics have a large impact on economies. And then impacts on economies means impacts on earnings and thus stocks. So be aware of that. So I'm ready for your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Have you heard about Riskalyze? It's a brief question and answer form that you fill out online. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein will also get a copy of your responses. They can use the Riskalyze results to help you formulate a strategy that fits your investing risk tolerance. Learn more anytime and take the Riskalyze quiz at investtalk.com.
Hi, I was hoping to get your assessment on Oasis Petroleum, ticker symbol OAS. Was wondering if you think this would be a good investment, and if so, what would be a good entry point? Thank you so much for all that you guys do. Bye.
All right, this is Oasis Petroleum. OAS is the symbol. And this is a smaller E&P company, about $2.8 billion market cap. Looks like it came out of bankruptcy in late 2020. But I actually kind of like that. Companies that come out of bankruptcy means that they got all of their, they renegotiated their debt down dramatically over that that period. And its earnings have come back in a big, big way. Supposed to make $31.93 this year. That's up 235% from last year. $146 stock. Supposed to make $30 next year. The chart looks like it's consolidating just fine. So based on forward earnings, it's trading at 5x forward earnings. I'm fine with that. 1.6% dividend yield. They just started paying that. Probably going to go up over time. I like, you know, I like oil companies right now, oil and gas companies. They have some midstream assets as well. So I'm going to give Oasis Petroleum, OAS, a thumbs up. Now we have time to tackle another caller question. This one came in earlier on an Invest Talk Anytime listener line at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Alex from the Bay Area. And my question is, can you compare and contrast a value stock to a growth stock? Thank you.
Well, there's no hard and fast rule of what a value stock is or a growth stock. You know, I always just like to look at like the IWF, the first IWV, iShares 1000 growth versus iShares 1000 value. It's a good way to look at the different types of companies. You know, growth stocks are about the story. They're about the companies that are quote unquote disruptors. And the hope is that you're picking names that are going to be much larger revenue wise in the future. And typically they have higher sales growth today. And the market is pricing a premium on those. Okay. So for example, the IWF, the average price to book is on the is 9x, whereas the category average is only 6x. But your sales growth is much above average. And in times where interest rates are low, you discount that future growth very minimally. What discounted cash flow model is. You have to discount it by some interest rate. When interest rates are low, that interest rate is low. In a time where interest rates are going up, inflation is going up, you care less about that future and you care more about what is actually happening today. Now, IWF, if you look at the sectors it holds mainly, 42% technology, 0.5% energy, 1% basic materials. So you can see the growthier stocks aren't doing very well right now because what's going up in value? The companies that can actually do something for you today. When times are tougher, when inflation is higher, it's hard to get your hands on things because of whether that's supply chain issues or just shortages of supply. You care about getting the products today. You're going to pay up for them. Your margins for those companies are going to be much better. Are you going to care as much about what company will do 5 years from now, 10 years from now? And the vast majority of those aren't going to turn into what they've promised or what investors hope they will be. So that's the difference between growth versus value. We've just gone through a period, decade plus, 14 years really, 2007 to 2021, where growth outperformed. This is a new era. About now, about today, about getting products and services that you can use today. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another InvestTalk program. Steve Peasley and I thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads. We do track our download numbers, and we've crossed over 40 million thanks to you. And you can get yours anytime at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and be sure to rate and review on iTunes. And if you leave your question with your review, we will prioritize your answer. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president and Justin Klein, chief executive officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial.